back to the Inside Lacrosse podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Jim Scher, CEO of World Lacrosse, on day plus one after full recognition of the IOC was granted to World Lacrosse. And Jim, I feel like that's a great place to start. What exactly does that mean?
Well, one, we're ecstatic that the IOC has granted us full recognition. We were, as you know, provisionally recognized by the IOC in November of 2018, which is a probationary period. And they watch your development as a sport, as an international federation, and your proficiency. And they went ahead and decided to grant us full recognition, which means we are now permanently a member of the International Olympic Committee as an international federation, and we maintain that status unless there are some problems with our federation. We will maintain that status. So it's pretty exciting that we are now have that affirmation from the IOC as an international federation. We are eligible for IOC grants and to attend the IOC general session and to be formerly a part of the Olympic family.
And one of the elements of this story was the review of the organization. And in your release, you referenced 500 pages worth of documents. Can you go into a little bit more detail? What exactly is the IOC looking at from the standpoint of World Lacrosse in order to make sure that this is not a decision that they will at some point in the future regret?
Well, I hope they'll never regret it. But what they do is review all of your organizational documents, your constitution, your bylaws, all of your policies. Then they do review your members and whether or not they have relationships with the National Olympic Committees or the sport ministries in their countries. They review all of your developmental materials, your coaching education, your officials education, just to make sure all of your areas are functioning as an international federation should. They work with the General Association of International Sport Federations, and they have some pretty well-defined guidelines for good governance for international federations. And they want to make sure that you're in alignment with those international federations. They also want to make sure that you truly are the primary or only international federation for your sport, because in some sports, or actually many sports, it's disputed as to who actually is the international federation that controls a sport. There might be multiple international federations operating in some sports, but it was an exhaustive review of our documents and our development as an organization, which you would expect and should be, and World Lacrosse passed all those with flying colors.
So one of the elements of this story that fascinates me so particularly is the way in which World Lacrosse has developed. And, you know, you can look at it on a number of different timelines. And I started Inside Lacrosse in 2008. And, you know, it was right around that time that the Federation of International Lacrosse brought multiple entities underneath its umbrella, which is kind of exactly what you're just referring to, particularly on kind of the men's and the women's side. And, you know, whether it was joining Sport Accord, adopting WADA standards, there were a lot of developments that were really substantial that preceded your being named CEO in the first half of 2017. But from your standpoint of essentially what the last 4 years have held, what are the big markers that lead up to this? And is it fair to say that while this recognition by the IOC is not the end game, it's not the ultimate goal, it was one of the most substantial targets that was set for the organization upon your arrival?
Yeah, it definitely was one of our priorities, because without recognition by the IOC, you cannot participate in the Olympic Games as a sport. So we needed to pass this hurdle, or all else would be futile going forward. So this was an incredibly important hurdle for us, one which we worked very hard to achieve. So, and not just myself, it started, as you referenced, around 2004, 2005, when the ILF, the Men's International Federation, and the IFWLA, the International Women's Federation at the time, decided to merge. That merger was accomplished in 2008. And I think we've grown over more than 20 international federations since then. And the sport has continued to grow in terms of numbers and reach and brand and impact. So it since 2008, which is not that long ago, it has had tremendous, the sport and the International Federation have had tremendous growth. And it really is, I think, a testament to the strength of the sport to be recognized by the IOC at this juncture, because some of the other sports that were recognized recently, along with World Lacrosse, have been trying to garner IOC recognition since the 70s. So this was a difficult process, and one which lacrosse has moved relatively quickly on. And there are a lot of individuals who've been involved in the sport since the mid 70s. And, people like Tom Hayes, who have done a tremendous amount of work, and the sport is now positioned where it can have an opportunity to continue to grow, benefit from the IOC patronage, and hopefully one day become an Olympic sport. So it's been quite a journey. But I think relative to world lacrosse, you know, when I started in 2017, it was a completely volunteer-driven organization. I was the first employee, and we now have 10 employees and enjoy a relatively modest budget, but a much larger budget than we've ever had. And we're continuing to try and build and grow in terms of our capabilities as an organization from this point forward.
You referenced something there that I want to double back on, which is the other organizations that received recognition having aspired to do so for decades. And, you know, there's one contingent of lacrosse fans or lacrosse players or lacrosse stakeholders who look at this coming alongside cheerleading or Muay Thai or was it ice boxing, and kind of looks sideward at the notion of lacrosse being grouped with sports that are, by those people's standards, viewed as, I don't know, less legitimate or some other version of that descriptor. But that is obviously pretty ignorant toward kind of the global community of world sport relative to the place that those sports have in their communities and more broadly. But then separately, also to your other point, you know, speaks to the IOC's point of view on expanding its sport recognition. And I understand it that getting provisional recognition in 2018 was really, really important from a timing standpoint, essentially from the, you know, it could be said that if it didn't happen then, it was either never going to happen or it was certainly going to take longer than was necessary in order to be able to achieve a target of being included, say, in the 2028 games in Los Angeles. So can you just kind of speak to the current climate of the IOC recognition of international sport federations and how fortunate World Lacrosse was at the timing to be included in 2018 and now fully recognized in 2021?
Yeah, a couple of questions there. And one is, other sports, which we may not know as well in North America. I think the lacrosse centric community lacrosse community is North American centric. And quite a bit of the focus is on this this region. But when you look at these other sports, and even cheer, which is primarily started in North America, but has tremendously expanded around the world and has, you know, millions of participants, well, these sports are pretty big on a worldwide basis and have pretty big brands. So while we might look at it through our lens, the IOC is looking at it in a different lens. But also, the IOC is changing its recognition process. We don't know what they'll move to in the future and how quickly they'll move so in the future. So the door is kind of closed for now. They've brought in these sports that had been provisionally recognized. Some had been provisionally recognized for longer than 3-year period. Some had been almost 5 years before they were granted full recognition. And they've kind of closed the door, and they're going to take a step back and look at how they move this process in the future. And so we were good in our timing to get in before that door closed. And it's closed for a while. We don't know when they'll reopen it and revamp their process. So we're very, very fortunate to have gotten in 2018 and to be fully recognized now.
Talking a little bit more specifically about this moment in time and the fact that, you know, this came as part of the 138th Olympic session. It was in conjunction with the awarding of the 2032 Olympics to Brisbane, Australia, and obviously a 1 year delayed and in many ways very heavily scrutinized Tokyo Games gets underway. How would you characterize this moment for the IOC and for international sport relative to your extensive career?
Well, you can always say every Games is a seminal moment, but this really is, because, you know, the Games themselves as a property are being challenged because they are very, very arduous and difficult task for any city to organize, made incredibly more difficult because of COVID for Tokyo and the Japanese government. And I think now that the movement will have to look to renew itself on successful Games following these Games. And I think these Games will be successful from one perspective, is that the athletes still have an opportunity to participate in an event that they've pointed their whole lives towards, because almost all sports on the Olympic program, this is the pinnacle of athletic success and achievement, and to have that opportunity taken away from them, when for most athletes it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, you know, would have been an incredibly difficult proposition for the IOC, the movement, and the athletes. So I think having the competition, even though it will be without fans, it will be under very difficult restrictions and very difficult circumstances, is still the right thing for the movement. But resulting, Tokyo will not have the celebration that they wanted. It will be a financially difficult Games for the movement. But I think Paris and LA and then Brisbane in 32, we'll have opportunities for the summer Games to rebound and kind of return to the prominence that they've once held. So that's a very interesting time for the movement.
So through that lens, one of the things that I think just the messages that I was receiving and the comments that I was seeing on social media yesterday is the confusion between what being recognized means relative to actually being a part of the Olympic Games. And I know you've explained this before on this podcast, you've explained it on insidethecross.com, so I apologize for asking you to repeat yourself, but can you just give more insight and perhaps more up-to-date insight into what lacrosse's path toward inclusion in a future Games actually is?
Yeah, this is still a step on the road. The first step was provisional recognition. The second step was gaining full recognition, which thankfully we now have. And then the next step would be applying to the host city for the Olympic Games, which the next opportunity for lacrosse would be Los Angeles. And we anticipate in the late fall of 23 through the spring of 24, the process would take place where LA would select host city sports. These are sports the organizing committee can add to their Games. And that's our first opportunity to get on an Olympic program. And so
just to interrupt you there, that is a relatively newly adopted component of the IOC's approach to awarding host cities. And the idea being essentially the legacy of the Games and the value of hosting locally in terms of providing sport opportunities and fan opportunities for sports that are particularly appealing in a local market, right?
Now, that's exactly right. The ISC wants to assist the host cities in hosting a successful games, giving them an opportunity to add some sports that appeal to their local market. And as we see, Japan has added karate and baseball, softball, among five sports they've added, which are very, very popular sports in Japan, and will have an opportunity to showcase the home nation's athletes and teams and be a draw for their games. So I think looking at it through that lens, with the popularity of lacrosse in North America, and the games being in LA, we have a good opportunity. And I think Brisbane also gives us an opportunity, as Australia does compete successfully in lacrosse. So I think we've got two good opportunities for the games going forward. Now, long-term, that might broach the question, well, how do we get in the Olympic Games permanently? Well, the IOC has kind of put that on hold since the process where wrestling was voted out of the games and then they were voted back on. The IOC has decided to freeze the core sport games program for a while until they see how this host city sport process works out. But I think over time, the IOC will continue to try and what they call modernize the Olympic Games program, giving lacrosse an opportunity for the future. But I think it's important that, you know, we recognize that we will have to continue to grow the game over time to be successful in that endeavor. We'll have to grow it around the world, build our popularity, build our brand, build the success of our world events. So I think that's a key for us to keep in mind that, you know, when we measure ourselves against sports that people in the U.S. might say, well, wait a minute, that's not a very viable or legitimate or popular sport. We need to understand that those sports are incredibly viable and popular in certain parts of the world.
And that is a really nice segue into sixes, which is a new discipline that's been developed over the last couple of years, which World Lacrosse rolled out the brand for in May, and which a number of entities, you know, national governing bodies, leagues, have started to, for lack of a better word, dabble with or experiment with or explore. Over the course of the last couple of weeks, we posted some content on InsideLacrosse.com last week about USA Lacrosse's first mini camp, including a conversation with Yale head coach Andy Shea, who was coaching both the men and women at that event. I saw that there was an event held in Germany similarly over the course of the last week or so. And this is a discipline that will be played in the World Games in Birmingham, Alabama, next summer. It was, you know, in the same way that the Olympics or the 2020 Olympics being played in 2021, the 2021 World Games will be played in 2022, and it'll be utilizing the sixes discipline. How do you characterize the launch and reaction to sixes, and how do you characterize the import of that, how important it is in terms of everything that you just laid out with respect to the sports development internationally? I guess the best way to ask the question is, why is sixes so important?
A couple of reasons, and great question, Terry. A couple of reasons. The first is we wanted a vehicle to grow the game around the world. And there are a lot of places that want to have lacrosse, want to have lacrosse leagues, want to have lacrosse for a grassroots audience, but just don't have the capability, field size, numbers of players to do full field game at this point in time. So we think it's an incredibly important development vehicle. But we also know that in the Olympic selection process, numbers are important. And to anticipate that you know, we could have 18 or 20 or 23 team size rosters across 10, 12 teams in the Olympic venue is not realistic. It just would not stand a chance to get in. It would be almost impossible given the restriction on numbers. The IOC has capped the full participation in Olympic Games at 10,500. So every host city sport takes athletes away from an existing sport and takes athletes away from prospective other provisional sports you're participating against. So it's a zero-sum game in terms of the numbers of athletes. So smaller side of discipline was incredibly important for our opportunity to have lacrosse participate in the Olympic Games. So it's incredibly important from that perspective. The launch was overall incredibly well received around the world. We've got a number of countries across our 70 member nations now having domestic lacrosse sixes leagues. We've had international development at national team levels with national teams picking it up and trialing it in games. And so it's been really, really well received. We've got some great competitions coming up. We've got in the first week of September, we have a men and women's competition in Central Florida for the Pan Am Lacrosse Association with that region of the world with 10 men's teams and 10 women's teams. In the end of October, we have a competition that we're really looking forward to from a competitive perspective to see how the teams stack up and to see how the game is played at the very highest levels. We have USA Lacrosse, Iroquois Nationals, the Canadian Lacrosse Association participating in a Super Sixes friendly in Sparks, Maryland. We also have at the end of August the Home Nations Championship with Scotland, Wales, and England participating there. We've got a smaller event with four nations in Costa Rica in December. And then we will in 2022, in the first half of the year, have a competition in Asia and one in mainland Europe. So a lot of good things happening in order to fully test the rules, train officials, train coaches, and familiarize our athletes with the play leading into the World Games in Birmingham in 2022. Now we know the reception wasn't 100% positive because there are those in the U.S. who believe that, well, this will impact the collegiate game. This is not true lacrosse. This is not the game we want in the Olympics. But I think we all have to realize this is now a global game. This is a game that wants and should be at some stage in the Olympic venue, and this is our opportunity to do so. It also gives us an opportunity to continue to grow the game around the world. So, and we think it will be an exciting version of the game. So it overall around the world with our 70 nations has been incredibly well received, and we think we'll have a very strong product for television, for Olympic Games, and for worldwide growth.
One of the criticisms of sixes that I see with relative frequency is that other sports didn't have to modify their games so dramatically in order to attain Olympics inclusion. And I just don't know that to be true. You have a much better sense or broader perspective on global sports and the Olympics than I do. Is it true that other sports have not had to modify their game as dramatically in order to receive Olympic inclusion, or is that just something that people are saying without much basis in fact?
I think it's something people are saying without much basis in fact, because if you look at sports that the last two sports to have been added were golf, which has a very limited field in the Olympics, very relatively small numbers, and rugby sevens, which is a modification of rugby. You look at other disciplines that were added, they're all smaller sided versions of the games, or disciplines that are looking to be added to basketball 3-on-3. And you look at baseball, softball, International Federation now developing baseball fives as an entrenchment strategy. Field hockey, which goes by hockey internationally, is developing hockey fives, which is an entrenchment strategy. But you look at the other sports, They're all individual sports, skateboarding, rock climbing, surfing, and they'll have, you know, 20 to 40 athletes in on the men and 20 to 40 athletes on the women's side. And that's it. That's their total complement of athletes. So there are no full team sports that have been added in recent memory. So, and the IOC, as we all know, has put this cap in recent years of 10,500 athletes. And Paris is actually the first games that they've held to the 10,500 cap. All the other games, they've basically said, yeah, we have a cap of 10,500, but it became more of a target or a guide, and the team and the games ended up with 800 to 1,000 athletes more than that. So I think it's a new world, and if we want to play in this world, we have to be realistic at our opportunities.
One of the other questions that arises around the conversation of lacrosse's inclusion in the Olympic Games is the Iroquois Nationals' eligibility. And obviously, coming away from last summer and the attention paid to their extended invitation to the World Games, I think everybody involved understands how important this topic is to so many involved in the sport. As I understand the process, the Iroquois Nationals would need to essentially form and receive recognition of an NOC. I believe that's a National Olympic Committee or a National Organizing Committee. And as I understand it, that process has begun. Is there anything that you can shed light on in terms of what lacrosse fans should be paying attention to in order to track the progress in hopes of, if lacrosse, say, were to be played in the 2028 games, the Iroquois Nationals could potentially be a part of that?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. One, you know, the Iroquois Nationals are incredibly important to the game, incredibly important to world lacrosse from a historical perspective, and from the perspective that, you know, they are now and remain one of our top competitive countries. So we would not want lacrosse in the Olympic Games without the Iroquois. And we'll do everything we can to help them become eligible. The fact of the matter is that the IOC and the Olympic Games organizers accept entries from National Olympic Committees. They don't take individual countries or teams from international federations. The mechanism by which the Canadian Lacrosse Association, the USA Lacrosse, or any of our other member nations would participate in the Olympic Games is through their respective National Olympic Committee. And I ran that process at the U.S. Olympic Committee for many years. And each national governing body has to qualify through their international federation, but then they nominate and submit their athletes to the National Olympic Committee for entry into the Games. The National Olympic Committee then submits those athletes to the IOC for entry into the Games. So in order to be in the Games, there's one avenue, unless you seek an exception, which have been very limited to date in terms of the IOC granting exceptions. And that is to have an NOC, which is recognized by the IOC, which can enter athletes. So we've had quite a few conversations with the Iroquois Nationals. They understand that now. They are preparing and themselves and organizing themselves as a National Olympic Committee, which takes Confederacy action for them to do so, and we're working with them in a guidance role to help them develop that NOC. So we'll continue to watch its development. One of the conditions of National Olympic Committee recognitions by the IOC is it fosters and develops more than one sport. So they would have to have five sports that are developed underneath its umbrella as well. So that's another hurdle that we'll have to work with the Confederacy to accomplish.
So Obviously, we have laid out a lot of kind of forward steps, and it's, you know, the combination of continued engagement and interface with the IOC, continued engagement and interface with the Iroquois Nationals, the adoption of sixes, the target for World Games next summer, and all of the international competitions in the second half of this year and into the first half of next year. And this sounds like a cruel question to ask, but outside of all of that, what are the organizational priorities? What are the things that you're focused on?
Well, the good thing is that everything we're focused on helps our Olympic effort over time as well. So, but we're not doing them just to get in the Olympics. We're doing them because that's our job as International Federation of what we should be doing. So we've got some really key critical goals as an organization. And I would put them into a couple of buckets. One is, you know, we want to continue to grow the game around the world. I think everybody who plays it in North America understands its value to youth and value as a force in the world. And just one for the enjoyment of the young people that get to play it as well. So we want to give more countries and more individuals that opportunity. So not only do we want to grow it around the world, we want to help our existing 70 nations grow the size of the programming in their countries. And that's by offering introductory programs for lacrosse, coaching development, officials development, and just resources for them to develop the game in their countries. And we have development programs that we've never had in place, and we're giving out more resources in terms of dollars and equipment than we ever have. So growing the game around the world is an incredible priority for us. Second, we want to build our championships, the profile and success of our world championships, formerly called World Games in lacrosse, which creates some confusion with the World Games, which is a multi-sport event. But our box world championships, formerly indoor world championships, our men and women's field world championships, lacrosse sixes world championships down the road, and sometime down the road, we have a group of countries and women who want to play box world championship. So we're working on the profile and success of our world championships, where we place these events, how well they do financially, how well they draw in terms of fans, how well they draw in terms of media interest, what our television rights and television property and television reach out of these events, and our sponsorship that we can generate from these events. And then using that as a lever, can we create a financially sustainable international federation for the long term, building our size and capability and financial stability as an international federation. And then I think fourth, continue to build our governance capabilities, how we lead, how we work with our continental federations, the gender equality in our governance structure and across the board and in the sport, all critically important. So all of those goals we'll continue to work on in the next couple of years. We'll have what I would call as our third iteration of our strategic plan that we adopted in 2018 as an organization. Will be put forward to the members at our General Assembly in late October, and we'll look to continue to build on the success that we've had over the past 4 years. I've been here 4 years now, or a little over 4 years, and it's been a phenomenal sea change for the International Federation of Lacrosse, and I think for the sport internationally. And we'll look to continue to build on that and grow for the future, and hopefully that someday will culminate with lacrosse being in the Olympic Games, which, again, we think would change the sport both domestically in the United States and Canada and around the world in terms of resources for the sport, in terms of the profile, in terms of the visibility it provides to the sport and the introduction into continued growth and success for a sport is well proven on all the sports that have been added to the Olympic program. But most importantly, we think it gives an opportunity for athletes in the sport of lacrosse to stand on a podium in the Olympic Games, which I think every athlete in the sport or virtually every athlete in the sport would love to have that opportunity someday.
Well, Jim, that's a good note to end on. We really appreciate your time on the second day of this significant news, both for world lacrosse and for the sport on a global level. As folks turn their attention to the Olympics this weekend with the opening ceremonies and some events actually already having gotten underway, I heard news this morning that the U.S. women's team lost to Sweden in a surprising upset that just kind of showcases the value of competing on the field. What will you be watching with this Tokyo Games?
Well, having both been the CEO of the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee and having been a wrestler and still connected with the International Wrestling Federation, I will definitely watch the wrestling competition with great interest, but also just see how the U.S. athletes and U.S. Paralympic athletes fare in the games. But also there's always unique stories that come out of the games, whether U.S. athletes or athletes from other nations. And it's kind of interesting to watch the games as they unfold and some of the unique stories of the athletes. But also it'll kind of be interesting to see the development of the games without fans and how the organizing committee and the IOC manage these games. But, every Olympic Games is unique. Every Olympic Games writes another chapter in the legacy of the Olympic movement. So I'll definitely be watching with great interest. Unfortunately, one of the few games I've not been at since 1984 because of the fan restrictions and the other restrictions. So definitely sad to not be there in person, but we'll watch with great interest.
You get to consume it like the way that all the rest of us, hundreds of millions and billions of people around the world do. So like I said, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast and look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Well, thanks, Terry. Always a pleasure.